Welcome to the Minifig Game Podcast, episode 201. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, that's twangy, man. I like
twangy
that.
And Phil Twangy Wilson's on.
I gotta tell you, you keep playing that one all day long. That's probably one of your better selections of tunes there.
Why, thank you, Phil.
Just a little rock and roll is always good for the soul first thing in the morning.
And you can hear all the rest of it at the end of the podcast.
There you have it.
All right.
Ooh.
Good.
That's a tease.
It is a it's a tease.
That's a tease.
So let's hear about the Mini Analytics Forum, Graham. I know we're going to have a guest on that we're going to get into it in some depth, but how was it?
Oh, it was great. Maybe one of the coldest, if not the coldest days in Minnesota. And what did they say, like 4 years?
Yeah.
I mean, we had like 25 below wind chills. So it was something to see people come out. Somewhere approaching 700, I think, showed up. And it was a very vibrant event that kept me there from about 7:30 till 7:30. It was about a 12-hour event by the time the beer stopped flowing.
Wow.
So hats off to Dan Atkins and Sean Larson and a bunch of volunteers for putting together a great event. Lots of great content and companies that showed up from all over the place.
And how many people?
Close to 700. I think there were more like 900 counting everyone who registered and wait listed. But of course, when it's free, there are always no shows. But I think they were pretty impressed with the amount of people that showed up in that awful cold. But we were inside all day and had a nice...
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't like it was outside in a tent.
No, we just had to make it in through the parking ramp and leave our coats in the car. So when I came back with no coat to get in the car, I had to slip on this like ice cold coat in the back seat. And oh my God, but we survived. It was wonderful.
First world problem.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was thinking, when I was walking the dog this morning, I was thinking about being a Native American living in a teepee in this kind of weather.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to walk into a toasty, warm house. So poor Graham with his cold jacket.
Poor Widow Graham.
Oh, my gosh. So, hey, Phil, can you give us a quick sneak peek at Mobile March? What's going on?
We're going to be rolling out the agenda. We sent out emails to our everybody that we've accepted in our online call for presentations, and we have some other stuff that we've booked as well. But we have some really good stuff. We've got four tracks this year because we've basically got so many mobile business directed topics that we've added a second business track. So we're doing mobile business and development and gaming tracks. So some great stuff. We have our friends from Microsoft doing a couple presentations on just what's happening on with Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, that sort of a thing. So we felt that was necessary to bring everybody up to speed on those things. But we also have everything from mobile strategy to the process and practice of mobile UI design. The gaming track is loaded with things like HTML5 based mobile games, mobile board game conversions. From Martin Greider is going to be speaking there.
Is anybody going to be talking about the announcement this past week of H.265, the true HD codec for mobile?
Not specifically on, none of it is.
But incorporated.
I'm sure somebody will incorporate it somewhere along the line.
Because it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. You got things from, developing custom iOS applications for the enterprise. The folks from Olson will be doing some business marketing content. Zeus Jones is going to be presenting with an interesting title called Modernizing Dog Food and how they're using mobile to strengthen people's bonds with their pets. One of my favorites on the gaming track is using chipmunk physics to create an iOS game. So I'm not exactly sure what chipmunk physics is. Are you guys hip to that, or is that just one flashy name?
That's probably like flinging chipmunks. I don't know. And how they splat.
Anyway, and then of course the keynote, as we had announced earlier in the year, or actually late last year, the keynote is Bob Shugai from Thomson Reuters. He's the global head of mobile technology. So,
and when's the agenda going to be posted?
The agenda will be posted online no later than Monday. I'll try to get it up on there on Sunday night. And then I just wanted to make sure that we were able to contact as many of our presenters as possible and make sure that they were still confirmed. And tickets are still available online. So we'll join us on the 21st of March at the Earl Brown Heritage Center.
Great venue.
Oh, yeah, it's a nice,
it's huge.
We're kind of excited about being there. So we're looking forward to it.
Yep.
That's great.
Started out as a farm. I used to work right near there when I worked for Medtronic, and I used to look out my window down at the corrals. They had like horses there
when I was a pup.
Did they have cars then?
Conference center. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, no, we rode horse and buggy to work in those days.
Yeah. Just curious.
Buggy whips, baby.
So well, we're excited about another really great agenda. And again, you know, Earl Brown, the part of Earl Brown that we're using, we're not using the huge space conference that they had, the new huge conference hippodrome that they have there.
Right.
You know, we're looking for a more intimate gathering. So we're about 300 people is what we usually plan on. So still a great value. Just it's just $115 for the day. So.
That is a great value.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Tim, since you're our resident Best Buy watcher, you are more aware.
Our death watcher.
Our death watcher. There we go. when I saw the thing about Amy Poehler during the Super Bowl ad for Best Buy, it was a real head scratcher. So what's up with that?
Well, I mean, Amy's got some talent.
Oh, definitely. I think she's great, but.
Yeah, no, it seems like an odd choice, and it seems kind of weird.
Why does it seem like an odd choice?
I don't know. I just don't think of her as a technology person, and I think that may be the point.
That is the point.
Yeah.
That's the point.
I put that in there only because, you know, for a company like Best Buy going through a major transformation, why the heck did they need to do a Super Bowl ad again, you know?
No.
I just don't see why they have to do it. I could see bringing her in to do a campaign.
God forbid you should advertise when you want people to come to your store.
No, I know, but the Super Bowl ads are very expensive. So
yeah, but it's not just the Super Bowl ad is not just about playing in the Super Bowl. It's the hype up to and after. When you produce a Super Bowl ad, we've turned that into an event. So
it better be a funny ad then. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Well, I can't imagine with Amy Poehler, it wouldn't be somewhat. And she got creative control. So I think that
it'll be hilarious.
She's brilliant. I think she's brilliant.
Yeah, she's great. She was great. There's no question. I thought the same thing about tech.
I just think it's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I don't know.
But you also,
I don't know what the payoff is, you know?
You tap into a talent that just had, rave reviews and did great things at the Golden Globes as a co-host there. And I just think it's a good move. It's a bold move for Best Buy not to just roll over it like so many companies do. Oh, we've got to cut back on our marketing budget because that's death to any company. You're not going to be able to cut your way up to success. So,
right. Well, and apparently the people that come up with their coupons also thought that.
Jeez, could you believe that?
Oops!
So, for people that tell them, just do a 2 seconds on the story behind it.
Basically, they had a deal with MasterCard that got you basically half off of whatever you bought, with some exceptions. But some people were able to do some pretty crazy things until they shut the deal down. So it was supposed to be a $50 off a purchase of $100, and that was it. So, that's still a great smoking deal. But there was no limit on how many times you could do it. So people were going back and buying $100 transactions, multiple times.
Including gift cards.
They forgot to, leave gift cards off, which is basically saying go out and, buy some cash for 50% off.
Yeah, so it was a huge deal. Obviously, they canceled the deal after a day, I think it was, or 2 days. So it was just yet another example of, they're trying things very quickly, and sometimes stuff gets out the door that that shouldn't. And well, there's plenty of people that are just waiting to take advantage of stuff like this.
You know? Well, you know, when I read this, I had two reactions. My first reaction was, boy, I wonder who the manager is. They're going to get fired. And then the second reaction I had was, this is actually brilliant to get people to pay attention to Best Buy.
It's kind of like a Super Bowl.
You can get an Apple TV for $50. I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
It is a good deal.
Yeah, I wonder if it costs.
I napped right through that. Darn it.
Yeah, did it cost him as much as the Super Bowl ad, you know, or probably cost him more than what they're paying Amy Poehler?
Well, yeah, who knows?
But which is a huge sum, I'm sure.
I'm just suspect that it was a mistake. So.
I think it was a mistake. Now, what was a mistake is they're $200 off the MacBook Air, which is still running today. Wow.
Yeah, the low end one is. The low end one is apparently out of stock. The one that was $799, the low end 11 inch.
It's already out of stock.
Yeah.
What I was going to predict. I mean, and people are starting to tweet this all over the place. It started yesterday, right? The $200 discount.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
People are still tweeting it. I saw somebody tweet today only. You know, it's like, I'll bet you they're already too late. I bet you they're run out already. And they are, huh? Online?
On certain ones, yeah, on certain models.
Well, the low end model, the one that's $799.
Yeah.
That's gone, I'm sure. The 11 inch with the minimal memory.
Right. But still, what a great deal.
Yeah, for a select few, you wonder how many they even really had, you know?
Yep.
They seem to just step on their schwants with these deals all the time. I mean, you know, did you see the Mashable? I mean, it's like Best Buy. It's like they can't seem to stop stepping on it. Mashable came out with the 7 biggest ripoffs in tech retail. And Best Buy was right up there at the top.
Ooh, ouch.
With their HDMI cable. Oh, my God. The prices they charge for those things. And, you know, a lot of people, and Steve, maybe you being a purist wouldn't agree with this. A lot of people think HDMI cables are all the same. I mean, you know, and Best Buy is still selling stuff over there that's like outrageously overpriced.
Well, they are. You know, here's the thing. HDMI is digital. So either the ones and zeros are going to get to the TV or not.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yes, but is an HDMI cable made out of the silk of silkworms that you have to milk by hand?
If they're monster cables,
they're magic.
Yeah. Oh,
they're actually made from unicorn moths that you have to.
Well, I'll tell you what. I went into by my dad's house. There used to be a TJ Maxx, and I walked in there one day and looked around electronics and stuff, and ended up buying two HDMI cables for $4 a piece and on clearance.
I bought them for that. They're fine.
Yeah. I mean, if the ones and zeros get to the TV, it's fine. You know,
you
and
get
then
a mono price for that too, or actually less than that. Like they're like $3.
Yeah. So. So let's talk for just a moment about the stock market reaction to Apple's record quarter. And this is all about missing expectations, right?
I put this story in because it just shows how crazy the stock market is. Not only did Apple have a record quarter, sell a record number of iPhones and iPads, record profits, all of that stuff, they went way past their guidance. And they met the expectation, which was crazy, yet they still get punished and they lose $50 billion of valuation.
Well, this isn't an Apple problem. This isn't a Apple consumer problem. This is, we're giving too much credence to people on Wall Street. Okay. You know, right. the people that are making these claims or these suggestions as to what things should be priced at and what the expectations are. So, you know, Apple is as relevant a company, as successful a company as it was 6 months ago. And to just have, you know, some Wall Street advisors say, "Oh, I don't know," is BS. The company will continue to be successful.
So here's a little bit of a contrarian view. And the contrarian view is, it doesn't matter what happened looking backwards. It's what happens next. and the market is pricing based on what they think is going to be coming. And what they think is going to be coming is lower margins, lower overall gross margins. They were looking for gross margins over 40, and they're, you know, 36 to 38. And so they're also seeing a softening in iPhone potential growth. And, you know, Tim Cook did say on the call, you know, we've got a huge, gigantic pipeline with all kinds of stuff in it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, so people are talking about an Apple Watch, an Apple TV. There's also a discussion of them doing things around the smart home, about having things in your home that extend the Apple footprint. And so who knows what they're going to introduce. And so that's the other part of it, is that is because they, you know, Wall Street wants to look forward and make projections. They're doing that based on the products that already exist always, because that's all they can do. And so that's what, why I look at all of this and say, I mean, my God, they just, the bottom dropped out of it, and it shouldn't have gotten hammered that much.
No, it shouldn't have. It's, anyway, yep. Well, it's just frustrating.
Like Phil says, the stock is not the company. That's the thing you need to remember. Yep.
Well, and they can't have it both ways, because there's rumor that they're going to do a cheap iPhone, which I don't believe.
I don't think they will either. And I think that, you know, that's if you're going to, for a company like Apple to try and address the market, you know, future market by trying to increase margin. I don't know if that's a good idea, or decrease margin. You know, you don't want a cheap phone. Cheap phone does not help the company in the long term.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, and then you've got all these people that are clamoring for a larger screen, you know, like that's what the market wants. And all these big, huge screens are, you know, are beating up Apple, but Tim Cook comes back with, hey, we looked long and hard at the optimal size to hold the phone in your hand and, you know, one-handed operation and all that. And, you know, they, if you believe what he says, they'll never do a larger screen. But do you believe that? I mean,
no.
Is the market really going that way? You know,
no, the market's going to be at 5 inches. I mean, the entry level phones will be at 5 inches this year. So Apple has to do something bigger. They will probably be on the smaller side. So I could see them doing something 4.5 inches, perhaps,
which is fine. I think anything over 4.3 is too big, or 4.5 is too big. That's me.
And you got long finger. And you
nobody really asked me, but you know, that's. I just think it's
well. All I love is the video of a guy sitting in a coffee shop holding an HD TV in portrait mode, and it's got like it's a fake, but it's got a gigantic iPhone screen.
Of course, you know, I say that I, you know, anything over 4.5 is too big, but of course the phone I'll get next probably will have a 4.7 screen. So, but it's just, and that's not a, it's not a. You know, I have long fingers, so that's not an issue for me. But if it gets bigger than your pocket, it's just not really a point. You
know? Yeah.
And I don't know. Tim, do you really think Apple's got to have a bigger screen?
Yes, I do. Because I just think that the market, I mean, it's a psychology thing. So you go into a store, not an Apple store, but a phone store, right? So you're in your AT&T store, and you look at it and you can get like this massive size screen that looks great for the same money as or less than you're paying for the iPhone that looks in comparison next to it very small. So people, I mean, if you were at Best Buy and you could buy a 40-inch screen TV for the same price as a, you know, 32-inch, you probably would tend to go to the 40 if you had a big enough space to put that in. You know, this same money and it's bigger.
Yeah.
So that's part of the psychology they have to work, you know, against. And it's clear that the market wants size form factors different than Apple, you know, thinks that we do. I mean, the iPad, our iPad mini is a huge example of that, where they resisted it for years. As soon as they come out with it, it's the biggest selling iPad ever. And, you know, will probably overtake the regular size iPads in numbers this year. So
thank you.
What?
For the compliment. No.
Oh, it was totally Steve's idea.
It was. Apple called me and asked me what I thought, and so I was,
hey, the latest rumors are that by October you'll have your Retina display iPad.
I saw that. Yeah. So. I'm definitely October. Getting one.
October.
Not the spring.
It's October. Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, we're getting October rumors already.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to touch on one more story, and then we'll jump in and we'll call our guest, Dan Atkins, who's the director of Mini Analytics and a managing partner at, how do you say it? Capsation LLC. Anyway, yep. The story that we want to just touch base on is this past week, Homeland Security's Janet Napolitano, she's the secretary, invoked the 9/11 to talk about a major cyber attack that's likely to happen in 2013. And I saw that come out and I thought, okay, well, you know, the military industrial complex, as Eisenhower said, is got to have the next threat. And if it's not boots on the ground, it's going to be this amorphous cyberspace stuff. So that's my tinfoil hat. But at the same time, I realize that the attacks are accelerating. Oh my gosh. I mean, the stuff I even experience on my stupid little sites is just unbelievable. But then TechCrunch today had Anonymous Threatens Massive WikiLeaks Style Exposure, and they announced it on the on a U.S. government site that they hacked, and the site's down right now. And it's really all about Aaron Swartz, you know, the young man that committed suicide. And I'll put some links in the show notes to this, but if you want, TechCrunch has their video, Anonymous's video, posted on their site. And if you don't think this is something that matters, you know, these guys are Anonymous. They're doing stuff where they've got files on people where they post their social security number and their home addresses. You know, remember when they did that with Dick Cheney? And all that stuff. So this is going to be a story I'm going to pay attention to, because I think it's going to be a big deal. The stakes are going up online, that's for sure.
So Steve, what's your position on Anonymous? Are you pro Anonymous or anti Anonymous?
Well, are they terrorists or
no? They're not terrorists.
They're
no.
freedom fighters.
Well, I don't look at them in that vein either.
They're anarchists.
They're clearly anarchists.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They're. I would say they're anarchists.
You don't want to piss them off, though.
It's an interesting tactic to use. Releasing sensitive data in a world where privacy is a big issue. I mean, sometimes when they make threats like this, it almost gives credence to, well, we've got to do something more to protect ourselves then. So maybe the penalties need to be higher. It's an interesting, it's a conundrum. You want an open internet, but you don't want it too open.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that, the penalties for stuff are way out of whack.
They are a bit out of whack.
And I think that's really, at the end of the day, that's what this protest is all about, is that the pendulum swung too far the other way.
Yeah.
And it's all about, keeping these people at bay and so on. I mean, that's why the NSA is building a $2 billion data center in Utah, because they're sucking everything off the internet. And now people are up in arms about using Skype because it's proprietary code. So, are the phone calls being captured, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of questions. I mean, as more and more of our world and our lives are online, the more important all this stuff is, the more important security is, because you don't want stuff's siphoned off, so it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. So are they building this data center inside of a mountain, or what is this?
No, there was a big Wired magazine article on it. I'll put it in the show notes. A couple months ago, and it's a $2 billion data center. They're big building, and they've got a picture of it from afar, and it's pretty amazing. And the whole warrantless wiretapping thing. And then Google this week, Google came out and said that they were basically saying to the government, we're not going to comply with all of these non-warrant requests for information.
Yeah. They could require a warrant now.
Requiring a warrant, because basically what they're saying is, look, you guys are out of control. you're asking for everything your site, because you know, if people don't really realize, because I'm Electronic Frontier Foundation member, EFF, because we need somebody savvy to be a balance to all of this. But if people aren't aware, all of our emails, anything that's not encrypted is captured. And anything that is encrypted, according to this article in Wired, is also captured, because there will be future opportunities to decrypt it as, you know, quantum computing comes in and all of that. So anyway, I don't want to go down a rat hole here, but I just thought this was a big story and needed to be included.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Graham. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've got a good transition into
the big data.
Big data.
Yeah.
Thing. There was a company that was there, that was an exhibitor and a speaker at the event on Monday, called Bright Planet out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, that does a ton of intel stuff with, you know, the spooks. Really an interesting company, but they're starting to go into other commercial markets now. And so that's something to look at. Bright Planet.
Stick in the show notes. That's
yeah,
great.
I will. Yep.
Well, let's bring on our guest. Want to just give us a quick brief on this guy?
Sure. Dan Atkins was the co-organizer of a group called the SAS Users Group, SAS, you know, an analytics tool that he and others started up, you know, 10 years ago. And three years ago, they decided to reposition this user group into more, instead of being focused on a single, you know, vendor, they named it the Mini Analytics Forum. And it's grown significantly since then. And they've started becoming an events organization and put on their first big one last May at Medtronic. And then the second event was the one held on Monday at the Carlson School. So Dan is an independent consultant, analytics consultant, does a lot of work with United Health Group, and a great guy, great connector, and it's going to be fun to have him on to talk a little bit about big data.
Sounds great. Let's give him a buzz and see what he has to say.
Good morning.
Hi, Dan. Steve Borsch and Graham Thickens is on, and Phil Wilson, Tim Elliott.
Hi, guys.
How you doing, Dan? Are you recovered from Monday?
not quite. I've been cut and pasting all the video links and slide deck links into room by room here. I'm through 207 so far.
Wow. Oh, yeah, wow. That's right. These guys are actually posting all the talks, which were recorded by the very sophisticated Carlson AV system, right?
Yeah, it's really a fully automated system. It's pretty cool, but it's got its drawbacks, because the camera tracks the speaker, and if somebody walks in the room and cuts in front of the speaker, the camera will follow them across the room and then watch them for the rest of the session.
Oh, so yeah. The speaker doesn't wear a pendant or anything, or
no?
Well, yeah, I know people are already clamoring to see the videos. It started almost as soon as the event was over. It's like that night and the next morning. When can I see the videos? When can I see the videos? You know, they're tweeting out, you know, so apparently they want their colleagues that couldn't make it to be able to see it. But anyway, quite a successful event, huh, Dan?
I would say so, particularly given the coldest day of the year.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. My gosh. Yeah. And people came and stayed a long time, although I'm sure there were people coming and going during the day too, you know, but I'll tell you, there were still a ton of people there, even at 6:30, 7 p.m.
Yeah. It's, we went through a lot of food.
Yep.
They're still counting the beer tickets.
Yeah.
were there a lot of students that came?
A fair amount. Grad students, the Carlson MBA program posted something on their Facebook page, and I saw a couple dozen MBA students sign up. I don't know if, you know, how old they were, but, you know, you'd see activity and then you'd see registrations, you know, reflect that activity. It was kind of interesting.
Well, and they would have had to have come to the event a day before school actually started, because school didn't start till Tuesday morning. And but yeah, the other thing I found interesting is how many colleges were represented as far as, you know, instructors and professors and so forth attending the event.
Yeah, I'd say at least a dozen. I mean, wow. We had them from all over, River Falls and Winona, St. Cloud, you know, four different colleges from the U, you know, University of St. Thomas, and it just goes on and on. Wharton, NYU.
Yeah.
Wow.
That speaker from Wharton on social TV analytics, I missed that one, so I'm going to want to see that video. That sounded kind of interesting. Yeah, so, and you know, the other thing that was impressive was the exhibiting companies. There was a lot of activity at those tables all day long.
Yeah, it does. The companies were almost tripping over themselves to come sponsor. That's kind of a first for us, where we used to have to work pretty hard to convince them to come. Now they have to, it's sort of the opposite. They have to convince us that we need more room, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Who were some of the big sponsors? IBM, EMC, who were the others?
Oracle, they came on, you know, they are sort of been silent in our community for a while up here, but they came in force. And of course, the list goes on and on. Those are the bigger ones. Telligence.
From Portland,
They flew in.
An exciting young startup, I convinced should be here, and by golly, they showed up.
They sent two people, and
three, and they gave two talks.
So and Dave Fowler from Revolution Analytics flew in from San Francisco. He's actually a Minnesota native, we had, of course, a lot of people from Chicago. A lot of the sponsors seem to be based out of Chicago, and they flew up.
Sure. Well, how about InfoChimps came up from Texas?
Yeah.
Well, rather than who was there, what was the big takeaway, guys?
Well, that big data is huge.
Yeah. Is it big?
Yes. In Minnesota in particular, I would say. And a couple of people have put it in different contexts, but the... In particular, and more recently, actually, Dave Fowler said, you know, there's a lot of big data conferences in Vegas and San Francisco and stuff, but he doesn't aware of any organization like this that puts an event like this on anywhere else in the country. And the co-chair of our, from Winona State, a professor said the same thing. It's sort of unique. And I don't know if that big data is bigger, but we definitely have a more active community.
Well, then Gartner comes out the next day and declares that big data is overhyped and it looks like it's heading for the trough of disillusionment. Did you see that story, Dan?
Yeah. I mean, it is overhyped, of course, as many things are, but it's not going anywhere. And anybody that thinks it's easy in any big project is going to be disillusioned rather rapidly anyway. Yep. So
one of the big takeaways that I got out of the event is that this whole talk about what is a data scientist and you know, you know, what does a data scientist do?
Well, I want to know what a data scientist / ninja does, because that's what it says on Dan's LinkedIn profile.
I don't know. We can't get any agreement on the difference between a data scientist, an analytics consultant, exactly what data mining is versus business intelligence. I mean, there's no clear distinction.
Yeah.
A lot of people have a lot of different opinions. Somebody believes you're not a data scientist unless you actually do some coding. Some people think you need to be classically trained as a scientist or adhere to classical scientific, you know, methodologies to be a data scientist. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, it's what happens is it becomes just like big data. It becomes commonplace. Everybody starts to attach it to their job titles. And you see it in big companies, and then people reach out to try to come up with something new that distinguishes them from everybody else.
Well, right? And there's all this excitement about big data from anyone who sells iron like IBM or databases like Oracle and so on, because they're just, you know, they're seeing the flood of information that's coming in, and how do you make sense of it? You know, and what about the data warehousing guys? And of course, EMC, it makes perfect sense because they're going to sell storage.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
They smell money. Yep. Well, but it's, you know, I mean, this data scientist thing, I mean, it was declared like the sexiest title of probably 2012, you know, and it's like everybody all of a sudden wants to be calling themselves a data scientist, and, you know, and companies are trying to hire them, and there's all this talk about, oh, there's such a shortage, and, you know, and so it's getting hyped a lot lately. And there was a whole session, Dan, you might want to comment on this. I didn't get a chance to sit in on this one, but a whole afternoon track, if you will, on talent, right, where they were specifically talking about how do you recruit these people, or who are they, what are they, where do you find them, and what do they do, type of thing. Did you get a chance to sit in on any of that yourself, Dan? Or
no, I'm waiting for the videos for that.
Yeah, one. Yep. There was a panel discussion, and then at least three or four other individual talks on that. So yeah, we'll have to look for those, and you'll be tweeting out the link to those videos when they're ready, right?
Yeah, actually, what I'm doing is, if you still recall the bigdatamn.eventbrite site, there's a link to the one-hand schedule and also a speaker schedule. I'm actually updating the Google Docs with hyperlinks to the videos over the titles, so we're just repurposing the schedule into a video distribution system.
Yep.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Grant.
That Eventbrite page will stay up there for quite a while, probably until your next event, which will be either, I believe you said, either late May or early September, hopefully.
Well, yeah. Like as the bigger they get, the longer I want space between them.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yep. I would agree. Yep.
One of the things I'm curious about, Dan, is because I've begun to see it in things like the Internet of Things. I've seen sites that are starting to curate content from big thinkers and videos and conferences and so on. But I haven't been able to find anyone who's curating articles and videos and tweets and so on around big data. Do you know of any?
No, not really. And maybe it's just because it's too broad of a topic.
Well, I think if you click on who Mini Analytics Twitter page is following, I think there's some of that out there, Steve. You might want to click on who that Twitter page is following, which I think is definitely in the hundreds now, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, you may have to hire a data scientist to sift through all that data.
That's right. Right. That's right.
Yep. Yeah, so Dan, do you want to talk about the future plans, what you have in mind for the next conference? I know you sort of outlined it a little bit in some remarks you made on Monday, I think, didn't you?
Yeah. Yes, there's a number of things. One, I sort of commented how we started out as a user group, you know, more than a dozen years ago with, you know, about 20 people at the Southdale Library, and we've sort of become this big thing, you know, with 7 sessions, and we ended up at our peak, we had 853 registrations with 93 people on the wait list, and it just sort of overwhelmed us. And so I sort of threw out to the audience, and actually Dave Graff came and did some research too, as to, you know, what are we? Are we an event organization? Are we a sort of quasi professional organization with, you know, colleges and universities calling us saying, you know, put us in touch with employers because we want to figure out who to train, you know, or are we, you know, just this generic umbrella organization for all the sort of analytics type communities like the, you know, SAS users group and the R users group and things like that. So we're sort of trying to reflect and deciding what we are, but nobody's really offering a whole lot of opinions to that actually so far. So maybe we just sort of continue ahead organically. But one thing we want to do is, and it's more closer to you know, where I work, which is healthcare. We want to do another healthcare analytics meeting. We've been trying to push that forward, but of course, you know, Optum Health said, yeah, we'd like to help you with our campus, but you know, you're too big. You know, it's like, oh, great.
And really too big for there? Wow, yeah, that's hard to believe.
Well, they don't have enough parking places and whatnot, you know, sometimes when you talk to the facilities person first, that's a mistake, because they generally have a can't do attitude.
Right.
You don't do anything to make their life any better, you know, so you really have to start somewhere else. But we want to do healthcare, and we want to move, again, not just about, you know, the hardware and the software, but also around the business of analytics, you know, and some of the one offers, you know, the what goes into an administrative healthcare claim, you know, what are the other data points that are starting to appear in, you know, the life sciences that could make, you know, analytics around that interesting, you know, so we sort of see it as helping to educate the community a lot more than, oh, here's how you do a cool plot in R or something like that. It's like, oh, you mean that's what's how people screw up data before I see it?
Wow. Well, I remember back in the 90s when I was at Apple, one of the biggest customers that Apple had was Mayo Clinic. Mayo was a dyed-in-the-wool Apple user, and one of the guys that ran biomedical computing was in charge of buying boxes for bioinformatics. And so I started to really ask him a lot of questions, and he finally told me that he had to leave because I think he was sick of me probing and asking all these questions. But when you look at the fact that these guys basically have a supercomputer center for bioinformatics down in Rochester, and the issue that I think a lot of people have is, to your point earlier, Dan, about how huge this is. It's just so big that how do you bucketize it? You know, do you bucketize it as predictive analytics? Do you do it by vertical? Do you do it by data warehouse? As a concept, I mean, it's kind of all over the map.
Yeah. And that's part of what we talked about and to make ourselves more digestible, whether or not we just sort of cut out some parts and make it more manageable. But, you know, everybody sort of says, every once in a while, it's good to bring together, you know, some academics and some public sector and some large enterprise businesses and small businesses, and to bring together, you know, the CIOs and chief insight officers and, you know, programmers and analysts and all of that, all sort of mix it all up to sort of get a feel for what's going on. And, you know, there's a lot of benefit to that, but again, you run into facility limitations as well.
Well, and to put this into perspective that a lot of people can maybe grasp, there are a lot of organizations that are going in and they're using Twitter's API to go in to look for specific hashtags and then what people are linking to. Then they go out and they parse the article online or look at the, you know, collate the video and so on, and trying to discern trends or trying to discern not just the zeitgeist of what's going on in Twitter at any given point in time, but also, you know, what are people's moods and, you know, trying to wrap prediction around that. And I've even done it just on a real low level about going in and looking for mobile security, who's talking about mobile security, and boom, up comes, you know, hundreds of tweets just in the last 3 hours on things related to mobile security. So, I mean, that's like a tiny, tiny, infinitesimally little small sliver of big data. But it's really fascinating where all this is going. And I'm more interested in some of the high level tools that are coming out to allow non-data scientists, maybe, you know, more on the business side to poke around and play what ifs.
Yeah. And there's a lot of those tools that more than can be mentioned, really, but particularly around what you probably discovered as soon as you start to play is text analytics becomes a real art. Because every possible abbreviation, especially in something as limited as Twitter, or different spellings, and, you know, I did a a project one time I talk about, which is sort of interesting, on a predictive model. And because a lot of IT people like to just make the data all normal. And the biggest, we're doing a predictive model around actually fundraising. And there's this huge difference. And the biggest variable was the person's title, whether they're a Mr., a Ms., a doctor, Mr. and Mrs., or Mr. ampersand Mrs. And there's a big distinction between the ampersand and the AND, and between the Mr. and Mrs.
Sure.
And if somebody, I don't want to say IT person, but a lot of people would go in and say, no, that's the same thing. That's a married couple. But it wasn't, because then the data came from a different source or something, but it was a tell on who was going to donate and who wasn't. So it's like, you don't want to go in and screw the data up to make it look all the same. And, you know, potentially the same thing could come in Twitter, the way different people may abbreviate, right, or hashtag or not hashtag. You just don't know. And it's just sort of mind boggling how you go about doing it, if you're even able to.
Well, I know I have one last question, if I could. Sorry, guys, to keep asking, but there's been a big push by several different groups to open up governmental and public data and make it more widely available for probing and so on. Is there anybody or any groups that you're aware of that is doing that overall? I've been interested in what Optum is doing relative to opening up their healthcare data with APIs so that developers can develop apps on top of it. Are you seeing any groups evangelizing, opening up data warehouses and databases, to either developers or the general public? I mean, is there a lot of that going on relative to, trends?
Yeah. You see it, you see some activists on it. I'm not aware of a well-organized
organization. Okay. So okay.
Graham, how about yourself? You've,
Not really keeping up on that myself, no.
Okay, so there's that.
Yeah.
So Phil's going to tease me now. Yeah. Well, Steve, you always ask these questions that there's like a huge pause at the end.
That's all right. You know, that means somebody doesn't know the answer. That's okay.
Oh, right? All right.
Yeah, there's people doing it. I mean, I was somebody working with neighborhood organizations in Minneapolis trying to get into police data. And, you know, how protective they are about the data, yet it's protected. And you hear, you know, about the other open data type attitudes about, you know, if it's public, then we want in.
Well, you probably remember the first really big Google Map mashup that was ever done was the Chicago crime, database, where you could type in your address and it would show your location, and then it would show all the different pins of different crimes that happened around you. And they were all color coded. So you could say, oh, the blues are murders. And so, you know, how many murders were there around me and how many break-ins and all of that? You know, I think that would be incredibly useful, but also, potentially really concerning to police not wanting to release it.
Right. And even last night I commented, as we were enjoying a nice Chinese meal, after spending, the waiter is quite impressed that I'd spent almost $7,000 in Chinese food this week. Couldn't quite figure out why, but anyway, I had to wait till, you know, last night to actually enjoy some. But I think Yelp is cutting into some city data on the number of inspections for different restaurants.
Oh, really?
And adding that, which is really sort of an interesting other data point. It's like, well, that's public information and you can get it, but it's also very hard to manage because it's not aggregated in any way other than city by city.
Yep.
But, you know, where that could take you, just, you know, that'd be really interesting. And there's so many different elements of things just like that that are available that people are going to say, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Reminds me of the George Carlin routine where he always said, you know, somewhere in the world is the world's worst doctor who graduated at the bottom of his class. Then he would pause and he would say, and you may have an appointment with him at 2:00 this afternoon.
And how are you?
How are you going to know? Exactly. Yeah. So having that data open would be great.
Say one thing, Dan, I was going to call out as far as what we picked up at the event on Monday was SoBacco, the Social Media and Business Analytics Collaborative at the U's Carlson School, announced they're going to have a new master's program, right?
Yes.
That's huge.
It's interesting. In 2014, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. It's, I don't know how far it made through, but it is. They're going to do it. It's just, and I don't know if and the president signed off on it yet, but it's okay. Been approved, and it's big. It's good to see. And again, it's at a master's level, you know. And Winona State's got an undergrad analytics, and our organization, Mini Analytics, actually is going to be sponsoring an analytics competition again in the spring. At the undergrad level, and there's like 20 colleges that participate in that.
Really?
So you're seeing it both at graduate and undergrad levels. And again, it gets back to that whole talent thing, and a lot of the discussions and presentations, not even in the talent session, are around that whole, how do you educate a data scientist? Is it a skill or is it a trait? And you know, I tend to think you're more born a data scientist than bred one. That's my personal opinion, that you tend to have a left-right brain thing and a creative sort of analytics approach to life, as opposed to a, you know, linear, you know, deductive mind. You have more of an inductive, you know, brain. But that's just my personal opinion, and I'm sure lots of people will disagree with that. But that's part of the interesting thing, is just having that discussion.
Well, you know, what's great too is having both. Who's the local New York Times reporter here that wrote The World is Flat? Thomas Friedman.
Yes.
Both Thomas Friedman and Daniel Pink have approached this from different perspectives, but have really talked about the next great leap in creativity and innovation is going to come from those who can see things in parallel and be able to harvest that and then assemble things into a new whole and create some new value, regardless of industry or approach or service or anything. And that'll be the big challenge. That's what excites me about big data as a whole concept, is that being able to somehow get all this stuff happening in parallel and be able to make some sense of it, be able to discern things from it, is the holy grail.
Yeah. Yep. And again, I think Minnesota has an advantage in that respect. And, you know, FICO had this where they're moving to the West Coast because of talent, which is kind of a joke, really.
Well, except though that most of their PhDs are out there anyway, in Marin County. That's what.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but and you know, somebody wants to move on company to pay for it, probably what it comes down to. Yeah. But the they don't have the luxury of a surplus of data scientists or talent in that respect out there.
Certainly not. We do. Yep. Yeah, they've got the opposite problem there, you know, out there. It's harder to find them out there than it is here by a long shot, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a column that you were quoted in the Tribune that Lee Schaefer did, kind of calling that claim of theirs to task, you know. You know, do you really need to go to Silicon Valley to find the talent? You know, that's what they implied was their reason for going out there, right? So,
yeah, it's who knows? But the answer to the question is no, you don't have to go there. I mean, there might be more data scientists out there, but there's more demand.
Yeah,
you know, I think we have a good representation.
Well, we're trying to convince people that you don't have to go to San Francisco or the Bay Area to get great tech podcasts.
That's
again, right here in Minnesota. Hey, well, Dan. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that, I mean, we have a creative culture here in Minnesota that I think is, if anything, you know, the creative communities suck some talent out of the tech community. But at the opposite also true, they contribute to it.
Yeah. Well, Dan, this has been great. I really appreciate you carving out time on a Saturday morning to chat with us.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
No problem. Anytime. I enjoy the podcast. I just add a little more creativity. I don't know how often you break into song, but you know,
feel free. You can. All right.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Dan. But
all right.
Interesting.
I feel a song coming on.
You start off, Phil. Go ahead. Jeez.
What would be a good Big Data theme song?
Yeah. 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
Hey, there you go. Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. So let's end with just a couple of more articles here. But what's going on with the nerdery, Phil?
Yeah, I just noticed that too. And the nerdery is laying people off. And you know, this happens with any companies, you know, with tech companies, with all sorts of companies. You know, they have to kind of restructure and reconnoiter. But I find it interesting that those layoffs come, you know, within a month or two after the big, we're going to hire 100 people in 100 days thing.
You think you just hired the wrong people?
I don't know.
Yeah. No, seriously. I don't know.
You wonder. I don't think it's the recent hires that are being laid off. Well, it begs the question, how many of those 100 did you actually hire? Apparently, profitability started to suffer for them, and I think they probably held off before they got anywhere near 100, would be my guess.
Yeah.
Oh, you would think. Yeah,
I would think.
They would back it up. But it was just interesting to see that piece. We're going to hire 100 people in 100 days, but we're going to get rid of some people to make room for them.
not exactly good projecting of your human capital needs there. You know?
Exactly.
They got a little ahead of themselves.
And I think we also have to, before we leave this week, we have to do our annual feature of how to speak French.
Oh,
and work on your pronunciation, since France has decided that the word hashtag is a no good.
Those French. Right.
And what's the new term?
The new Twitter term is pronounce mot dièse.
Mot dièse.
Mot dièse.
That translates, mo is word, right?
It's a sharp word.
Sharp word. Okay.
And a lot of people are commenting that it doesn't make any sense because it references the sharp sign from a music staff rather than the pound sign.
Oh.
Or the hash sign.
Or the hash sign, depending on what you want to call it.
Yeah. But it's English. Hashtag is English.
But I thought you had a good idea what we could call it.
Freedom tag?
The freedom tag.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. Try the day. Try the veal. And who's using Vine? Anybody?
Anyone? I was tempted, but I haven't.
I downloaded that thing, but oh, my God. It's like, do we really need more looping videos? But then now I'm reading that, no, that's not it. What's the deal is you can stop and start, and you can do, like, capture, like, short, you know, video grabs and
put them together.
In a 6-second thing.
Yeah, so
that's
the art
form, supposedly.
But it's for iOS only, right?
Right now.
But hey, don't worry, it's coming soon to another platform near you. I think the new Linux is the next platform they're going to use, right?
Oh, geez. But hey, didn't they get cut off from Facebook?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, they did.
Yeah. I saw something.
Yep.
There's a site that I just dropped into the notes called Vine Peak, which is basically a real time thing, which shows vines as they show up on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
One right after the other. So it's kind of an interesting site. So you can see a lot of what people are doing with it.
Vine Peak.
A lot of stuff is really goofy though. I mean, we're looking at a lot of crap, you know. I mean, you can look at the ones they're highlighting, the editor's picks. And, you know, the banana thing. Yeah, okay, that's cool, you know, but
that's how Twitter started, though, at the beginning, where it was like, here's a picture of the food I'm eating. Like, you know, I don't care. You know, here's my toothbrush. Look at how smushed the brushes are. I don't need to see that or even hear about it.
It'll get better as time goes on. I hope so, because Twitter themselves have hyped it beyond belief, so they better start, you know, measuring up.
Yeah. Well, boys,
it's their latest gimmick.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a long-termer.
No.
Well, they're smelling advertising money, I'm sure, you know, or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. So. Let's just real quick, because we're over, let's just do a quick what's new on the upcoming events list.
Well, I put in there the Google for Entrepreneurs Day.
That looks cool.
But that is sold out. But it's really basically a Google showcasing, you know, the stuff they have for small business and startups. So,
okay.
You know,
okay.
Websites and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
Should I mention it on Google Plus, or would anybody see that if I did that?
Ooh, burn.
If a tree falls in Google Plus, does it make a noise? Yeah, right.
Oh, boy.
And then TechFuse, I didn't even know about this.
Yeah, I put this in. It's $349, and it's at the convention center. But it's unfortunately, their planning is screwed up because it's on the same day as Mobile March.
Oh, geez. Okay,
No way. That's a fail, baby.
Yeah. Well, it's like almost three times the expense of Mobile March as well. So I'm sure it'll appeal to a different audience.
Yes, it will.
Yeah.
I don't even know who this main keynote guy is.
Yeah, Ray Bender. He's a speaker.
Who the
hell? But you know, this is really targeted for CIOs and VPs of ITs and director of ITs, people like that. So that's really the target audience.
You mean people that have $349?
It's a
what you're saying.
Guys, it's a Microsoft event, guys.
And they're managing SharePoint servers.
Ooh. Okay.
Wow.
It's a Microsoft event.
Cutting edge.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got they're basically showcasing all of the services and software that Microsoft uses. So
okay.
Take a look at it.
Sure is a nice photo of the convention center.
Isn't it a nice photo of the convention center?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is very nice.
Swell. I think I'll be at Mobile March, though.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right.
And Graham just earned a free beer, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, right. Is that how you do that? I might tweet about it, too.
No, that's a mixed drink.
But, you know, the other thing coming up is Mini Bar. I didn't realize April 6th. I hadn't noticed that till now. That's good.
Yeah.
Have they said where it's going to be yet, or is that TBD? Huh?
Still TBD.
Okay.
At least I haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Yeah.
They've just released it.
Saturday, of course, since it's an all-day event.
Right. I get a lot out of these mini bars. I just think it's a fabulous event.
And they're tasty, too.
They are tasty.
Sorry, the mini bar. Get it.
Yeah, we got it. Hey, with that. Go ahead.
It's free.
It's free. It is free.
Sponsor supported. Yeah, yep. Baby.
All right, with that, we got to stop. Thank you, everyone, for listening to
the Minivate Gang podcast.
All right. Take care, guys.
See ya. Good week.